Today's presenter is Rich Montroy. Rich has over 10 years of experience supporting Westshore MQ messaging and has supported the service integration bus since the release of Westshore Application Service 6.0. At this time, I'd like to turn the presentation over to Rich.
Hello, everyone, and welcome. Today, we will go over how to configure an SSL connection from the IBM J2SE client and the Webster Application Server 6.1 Service Integration Bus. First, we'll start off with a brief introduction to the Java Message Service Integration Bus, and the Java 2 Standard Edition client. Then we'll move to talk a bit about the Secure Socket Layer and Java Secure Socket Extensions. Each of these topics could be a series of presentations, but we don't have the time to go into these in much depth beyond what is needed to establish the secure client connection. At the end of the presentation, I have some very helpful links that will give you more on these initial topics. Okay, so after the initial introduction of topics, we'll move on to discuss the connection to SIB from the client and some configurable components such as transport chains and provider endpoints. Next slide, please. Then we'll discuss the SSL configuration. I'll have a code example you're free to use yourselves, and then we have what I hope is the real benefit of the presentation, the actual step-by-step walkthrough via the admin console of the setup via the panels. Configuring an SSL connection for the client may not be something you are doing right now, but hopefully you can use this to walk you through it when the time comes and save yourself some headaches. After we look at the admin console panels, we'll look at a few common problems, look at tracing, go over some links, and end with questions and possibly even some answers. Next slide, please. What is JMS? Simply put, JMS is a Java-based API for sending messages. It's really a set of interfaces defined by the JMS spec under JSR 914 that a JMS provider implements. JMS supports asynchronous and synchronous messaging. With an enterprise messaging system, messages are frequently delivered asynchronously from one system to another. This means the sending application doesn't have to wait until the receiving application gets the message. The sending app is free to send another message and continue doing other work. Web applications, for example, are typically synchronous, meaning they have to wait for a response. Again, JMS supports both of these. JMS is loosely coupled, meaning one side does not need to know anything about the other. So I could replace the JMS client code on the sending side, and the receiving application should not know the difference. Next slide, please. JMS components. Okay, so if we take a look at some of the components of JMS, a JMS provider is an implementation of the JMS interface by a messaging system. JMS clients are applications that produce or consume messages, pretty simple. Messages are objects that contain data. Administered objects. JMS uses connection factories to create connections to a JMS provider and uses destinations as the target for messages. These are typically better managed by an administrator rather than creating them programmatically, although you can do either. As you'll see in the client application later, we'll do a JNDI lookup for a connection factory and a queue destination that have been defined in JNDI from the admin console. Next slide, please. Service Integration Bus. The default JMS provider with WISE 6 is the Service Integration Bus, which provides a managed communication framework. You may recall with WAS 5, we used Embedded MQ as the default provider, so this is a pretty big change. The Service Integration Bus supports JMS 1.1, which means it uses domain-neutral objects, so we're talking connections versus queue connections here, but it's backwards compatible to JMS 1.02b. Next slide, please. Some components of SIB. A bus is really an architectural concept for administration. Applications connect to a bus, and the bus is made up of one or more application servers which host message engines, which is sort of like queue managers for our AMQ friends listening. So you can create a bus, and you really have nothing until you add a bus member to the bus. A bus member can be a server or cluster of servers, and this action of adding a bus member actually creates the message engine for you. Destinations are message targets, as I mentioned earlier, I use generally there because there are such things as alias destinations and foreign bus destinations, which are not really relevant to this discussion. Next slide, please. The J2SE client, affectionately referred to as the portly client, is just a small client containing SIB classes that let you connect directly to a bus. You can install it in any directory and run it with either IBM or Sun JREs. There's a different install for both. It prereqs WebSphere Application Service 6.0.2 or later and is available from AlphaWorks. Next slide, please. Some components of the client. There's not a whole lot to the client. Keep in mind there are separate installs for Sun and IBM, as I mentioned. The bin directory contains optional batch files and shell scripts for configuration. I'm not using these. Feel free if you like. The docs for the client explain how to use it. The Etsy directory contains default key stores and trust stores. We'll talk later about what these stores are. And we won't use these default stores because we're going to create our own. Lib contains the actual client jars and the SIB classes. When you install, there are options for whether you're using JNDI or not. And it's only two jar files. They're pretty small. The sibc.jms.jar is about 2 megs, and the sibc.jndi.jar is about 400k. There's a license file, and finally a properties directory. And you can refer to the properties file in your application and put all your JMS system properties in. Okay, slide 10, please. What is SSL? SSL was developed by Netscape in 1994 and is a standard to guarantee secure communications. SSL is based on public key infrastructure and uses public key cryptography, which guarantees that when one side encrypts data using its public key, only someone with a corresponding private key can decrypt the data. Public key encryption is used during the initial handshake to validate identity. So each certificate has a public key which can be used to encrypt data that only the owner of the private key, which you have to keep safe, can decrypt. Data encrypted with the private key can only be decrypted using the corresponding public key, which is in the certificate. And in combination, these are used to confirm the identity of one or both parties. Shared key encryption is faster than public key encryption and is used once the shared key has been exchanged during the handshake. SSL provides the ability for this key to be renegotiated at regular intervals to keep the connection secure over long periods. Hashing is a way to ensure data is not modified en route to a destination by sending a small summary, or what they call a message digest, along with each chunk of data, allowing detection of any change in the data. And certificate authorities are used as sources of trust, signing the certificates of individual entities. By trusting a certificate authority, you trust the identity contained in all certificates signed by that authority. So you would typically create a certificate request, send that certificate request off to someone like VeriSign or GlobalSign, and they authenticate you and send you back a certificate that you would use. Next slide, please. What is JSSE? Java Secure Socket Extension is how you secure communications for Java applications by using SSL. There are different SSL providers. Sun is one, IBM is another. We'll be using the IBM JSSE provider that comes with WebSphere. Transport layer security can be thought of as a newer version of SSL, and for our purposes is essentially the same thing. So JSSE uses SSL, which means we use asymmetric key pairs for a secure connection, So we're talking public-private keys, and these key pairs encrypt session-based secret keys that encrypt larger data. This is all part of the SSL handshake, which we'll talk more about. Next slide, please. Some terminology. A key store is a repository or a database for certificates, just a file on disk. A trust store is another kind of key store, and really a JSSE term or a JSSE thing for the key store containing signer certs. So in JSSE, your signer certs will be in your trust store, and your personal certs would be in the key store. Digital certificates are electronic ID cards, the method SSL uses for a public key cryptography. They establish the owner's identity and make the owner's public key available. Personal certificates are used to authenticate yourself and contains a private key and corresponding public key. CA certs are from a certificate authority, as I mentioned earlier, and are added to a trust store when you want to trust all certificates signed by that certificate. Private keys are stored in private certificates and are keys that a user keeps secret in asymmetric encryption. It can encrypt data that will be decrypted by public keys and vice versa. Public keys are stored in the signer cert. Signer certificates validate certificates that are sent to WebSphere application server during the SSL handshake. So the private keys you keep private, the public keys you can give to anyone. Self-signed certificates are certificates signed by itself, so not verified by a third party like VeriSign or GlobalSign, often used for testing or for perhaps inside a firewall. Ciphers are the encryption-decryption algorithms for authentication. Next slide, please. The SSL handshake. I've seen quite a few descriptions of the SSL handshake. Some pretty involved, but for our purposes, we can keep it pretty simple. SSL has the notion of client and server. The client sends the first message, which is a client hello, which causes the client and server to exchange a few messages to negotiate, the encryption algorithm to use, and to pick an encryption key for this connection. Then the client's data is sent over to the server. After this is done, the client and the server can exchange data over a secure connection. Remember, though, the client always authenticates the server. The server may optionally authenticate the client by requesting the client to send its certificate there in the server hello reply. So in summary, you have the client and hello, which sends the highest TSL protocol version it supports and suggested ciphers, the server hello back with the selected protocol version, initial ciphers, X509 certificates, and optionally may request the cert from the client for a two-way authentication. There's a key exchange, there's another cipher suite negotiation, and then the handshake is complete, and you're ready to start sending data. Next slide, please. What do I get for SSL? If you remember that PAIN acronym, it was a little too tempting not to include here. Privacy by public key encryption and symmetric key encryption. Authentication allows the client to verify that the server they are connecting with is really who they say they are. Integrity, which means messages are received as they are sent with no modification. And non-repudiation, only the signer of the message can generate a signature. So a recipient can always prove that the sender signed a message, which can't be denied later by the sender. So we recall three key security concerns. Eavesdropping is addressed by encryption. Tampering and impersonation are addressed by public key cryptography. Next slide, please. Connecting to SIB. There are a few different clients available to connect to SIB besides the J2SE client, so I thought I'd mention them here. There's a thin client, which runs outside the client container and uses a different programming model than the thick client. The thick client uses launch client and runs inside the container, so you get the benefits of J2EE, which means security, JNDI, portability, easy deployment, all that good J2EE stuff. But we're focused on the portly client, which, as we saw, is small, fairly simple, and does not require you to run anything inside a container, so all you need is a vanilla JRE. Next slide, please. On the SIB side, I didn't have room to include all the screenshots for these, but as this is billed as an intermediate level presentation, I'll assume most of you are somewhat familiar with this. If not, I have links at the end to some DeveloperWorks articles that show how to do this. And when I say this, I mean creating a bus, adding a bus member, that kind of stuff, doing your connection factories. But to start off, we have a bus named Linux Test Bus, a bus member named Server 1, a message engine, and a queue destination named Test Queue. In JNDI, I created a connection factory named JMS Portly CF and a JMS queue named JMS Portly Queue, which points to Test Queue. Next slide. Starting point on the client side. On the client, all I've done so far is to set the class path to the client jars and include my current directory. An important safety tip is don't include any other WAS or MQ jars on your class path for this client, as you're going to get some really weird errors if you do that. Next slide, please. Transport chains. Transport chains are essentially combinations of channels. For example, the inbound secure messaging transport chain is a combination of the SSL channel and the TCP channel. These are the default names, but a user could, if they wanted to use their own, they could create their own transport chains. I don't know anybody who's really doing this, but it can be done. The client application will specify a transport chain to connect to the bus. Typically, once you have SSL enabled, you would disable the inbound basic messaging transport via the admin console to keep non-SSL clients from coming in. Next slide, please. Provider endpoints. Provider endpoints are for the initial bootstrap. Your client application will specify this in triplet form as hostname, port, and transport chain. Bootstrap basic messaging is for non-SSL. Bootstrap secure messaging is for SSL. So you can specify whether you want the bootstrap request to be sent using SSL connections or not. I'll have a couple examples of this later on. Next slide, please. This shows us the default port configuration for Server 1. Notice the ports for SIB endpoint address and SIB secure endpoint address. Traffic coming in over 7276 will not use SSL. Traffic over 7286 by default will. So 7286 is going to be the SIB secure endpoint address. These are the ports we're talking about when we're talking about provider endpoints in the previous slide. Next slide, please. Some required properties. There are really only three properties you need to worry about in your client application. So let's summarize them. A client needs to connect to a bus, so you need the bus name, and then you need the transport chain and provider endpoints. Here are some examples of how to do it programmatically. We're passing a bus name, Linux Test Bus. The uncommented JMS Queue Connection Factory is the old JMS way of doing things. The uncommented. The commented example is the 1.1 way, just showing either will work. Then we set the transport chain and provider endpoints. Next slide, please. Here is, we start a little bit of a sample code here. You can cut and paste this and use this. I had to squish it down a little bit, so I apologize for the formatting. But the main thing I want to point out on this slide is the import of the SIB classes up at the top. Next slide, please. Here we have the system properties that point to the stores and the passwords for the stores. Notice the password to the stores, which I cleverly set to password. Shows in plain text. You could use the properties file I mentioned earlier with the SIB client, so the client points to the property file which contains this. This way you could lock down the property file to keep the password hidden. Next slide, please. Here we're doing, or beginning, I should say, the JNDI lookup. Next slide. And here's the rest of the lookup where we set the target transport chain and inbound secure messaging, which means an SSL channel. The provider endpoints point to port 7286, which is the port for subsecure endpoint address, which means we're doing SSL. And notice the bootstrap secure messaging or message, which means the connection to the bootstrap server will use SSL. Next slide, please. Here we create the session and send a message, standard stuff. Next slide, please. And we're closing everything out and doing our exception handling. Next slide, please. Okay, SSL configuration. Now we're getting into what I hope is the real beneficial part, how to set it up in WAS 6.1. Keep in mind this is different than WebSphere 6.0. There's a lot of SSL-related stuff under the admin console, but we only need to worry about three items today. If you see the related items on the right, they are key stores and certificates, SSL configurations, and then at the bottom, manage endpoint security configurations. First, we'll click on key stores and certificates. Next slide, please. Creating the key store. You can use the path trail in the admin console up at the top to see where we are. And here we create the server key store, which will eventually contain the personal certificate for the server. You could do this in OpenSSL or even the version of GSKit which ships with MQ. I've done both. They both work fine. But we might as well use what's shipped with WAS. If the key store exists, you just need to put the full path to it. If it does not, it will be created if you have write permissions to the directory. There are several key store types. PKCS12 is a common one, and I believe the default for WAS, so I picked it. And remember, the key store is password protected. Next slide, please. Next, we create the client store, which will contain the signer certificate for the server's private certificate and the client's personal certificate for two-way authentication. Notice, since we will be moving this store to the client side, I made this a JKS-type store since this is the JSSE default. Again, password protected. Next slide, please. Here we see the list of configured stores. Notice the server key store and client key store will be created. We will go into these and create our self-signed certificates. Also notice the Exchange Signers button, and we'll talk more about this. So before we created the two stores, you know, you come with the cell default key store and the cell default trust store, but now that we've created those, you see the ones we created at the bottom. Next slide, please. Now we create a self-signed certificate for a server. Remember, this is just a personal certificate signed by itself and not by a CA. Next slide, please. The alias for the certificate is any name you want it to be known as by the key store. You could call it Fred. You could call it whatever you want to. The common name is typically the host name, but I would suggest reviewing the info center about each of these fields. Those are the ones I have showing are the required fields, I believe. But, you know, the validity period is just how long the certificate will be valid, and the organization is what organization you want to put in there. Next slide, please. Creating a self-signed certificate for the client. We're doing this because we're going to go for two-way authentication, but it's the same process as we did before. Next slide, please. Now we're back to the Exchange Signers button. If you go back to that panel that we had before where you saw that button, if you click on that button to exchange signers, this is actually kind of slick. It allows us to easily exchange the signers for the self-signed certificates we just created. We could have extracted each signer and added them to the other side, but this is much simpler. So now the server key store contains the server personal certificate and the client signer cert. And the client key store contains the client's personal cert and the server signer cert. So we're ready for the two-way authentication. Next slide, please. Creating an SSL config. Next, we have to create an SSO config, which will point to the server key store. We could create separate stores for the key store and trust store, or use the same file as we're doing here. In a real-world scenario, you might want to use a separate trust store and key store to keep your signer certificates separate from your personal certificates. This way, you can have tighter file security on the key store that contain the personal certificates. Once you point to a specific store, you have to click Get Aliases. Then you'll see the alias, that's the name you created for the personal certificate, in the drop-down and be able to select it. The QOP setting on the right takes you to the panel with a checkbox essentially to enable client authentication. Next slide, please. So up at the top, you see the little box for client authentication. I guess it's not a checkbox, it's a drop-down. But you have choices here, as you can see. There's required, which means the client's required to send a certificate. And supported, it may send one, and none means that you're not authenticating the client. And notice at the bottom there, I didn't have quite enough room to fit all this in here, but you can add or remove ciphers here. And you can see in the middle there, we are using the IBM JSSE provider. Next slide, please. Okay, now we're going to manage endpoint security configurations. So we're going to need to pin inbound and outbound endpoints to an SSL config. Notice the endpoints are pointing to the default SSL config. And we have not set up SSL for this default config, so we need to point the endpoints to the SSL config we created. Remember, the SSL config we created points to our server key store. The inbound endpoint is all that we really need for the client to connect. The outbounds are connections going out of an application server, like a client connection to an ME and a separate JVM, or one ME talking to another. I created both. Next slide, please. Okay, so now we're going to have an example of showing you how to set it in the endpoint. We can manage the endpoints at various scopes. Here I'm doing it at the cell level and pointing to the test SSL config that we created earlier. Once you click update the alias list, you can select the correct certificate alias in the key store. Remember, this certificate alias is the name the key store knows the certificate as. Next slide, please. We now see the test SSL config is now listed at the cell scope for both inbound and outbound. Again, we only need the inbound for the client, but I just created both. We could, for example, at the node scope, point the endpoint to a different SSL config. So we could create an entirely different config using a different key store and have that override ours if we wanted to. There are links at the end that talk a little bit more about the scopes for SSL connections. Next slide, please. So if we go over the summary of steps for a secure connection, let's review a little bit about what we did. We created the key stores for the client and the server. We created self-signed certificates for each. We exchanged signers. We created a new SSL config that points to the server key store. We enabled two-way authentication. We pointed the inbound endpoint to the correct config. And what I didn't talk about, but we moved the client key store over to the client box, so I just FTP'd it over, but you can copy it however you want to. And we pointed the application to the client stores and the correct endpoints. Next slide, please. Common problems. Here are a few examples of some common problems when running the client. The JMS exception at the top is really generic, and I have a defect open with development about how to make this better. There's not much we can do in the case of a bus name being wrong. Hopefully, the other exceptions in the future could provide more detail to help you troubleshoot without a trace being needed. But, you know, you can get that top error for many, many different reasons, and you're pretty much going to have to get a trace to figure out what's going on unless you get lucky. The bottom initial context exception would typically indicate a class path missing the client JNDI.jar. So if you're setting your ClassPass up and you're not using JNDI and everything's working, and then suddenly you try to use JNDI and it's not working with that initial context exception, then it means you need to include the JNDI.jar file for the SIP client in your ClassPass. Next slide, please. Actually, there's one thing I wanted to mention. Can you back up a slide, Elijah? When I created my SSL config and restarted WebSphere after the message engine showed started, my test application still failed to connect with that same generic exception at the top. And eventually I figured out that WebSphere wasn't fully initialized yet, and if I waited a little bit, my application would work. I don't think this is a SIB issue, and I haven't had a chance yet to really dig into it too much, but I need to do some work with the security folks to see what the cause is. But if you're testing out the application and you restart WAS and your application doesn't seem to work, give it a minute or two and then retest it and see if it works. And depending on what I get from the security folks, I may open up an APAR on that. Okay, now we can move on. Elijah, thanks. Enable trace. Here's an example of how to enable trace on each side. I didn't have much luck with the WebSphere security traces for SSL details on the client. So you want to make sure you enable the debug traces, which seem to do a better job of reporting SSL-specific stuff. So for the clients, we're enabling debug output to the console, and we'll see on the next slide what that looks like. Then setting the path and file name for the trace using the SIB trace strings. The server will use the SSL splat and TCP channel strings, and as you can see, how to set the WebSphere JVM properties for enabling debug output on the server. Next slide, please. So here we have the debug trace output to the console. So this is going to be just the debug portion. Notice you can see details on the ciphers used, the key stores used, the ports, and this is just a partial output. So this is kind of comforting to know that you can run this and actually see what's going on. Next slide, please. Okay, now we're kind of at the end of the presentation. We're at the point where we're going to talk about some useful links. The first gives a more detailed introduction to SIB and the service integration bus. The second link explains how to set up a bus in an ND environment, which is kind of handy if you haven't done that before. And there's a series of good articles or developer works articles there that all involve SIB, which are handy as well. Next slide, please. Here's some really good links for JSSE and SSL. The JSSE reference guide, you definitely want to take a look at that. The second one down, we're talking about JSSE and WAS. That's also excellent. And then, of course, the SSL and certificate and key management enhancements is another excellent article. And then anything by Keyes Botsum, you know, you're going to want to take a look at because he is the security whiz. Next slide, please. Here we have some links to the SIB must gather information. When you open PMR, the must gather is going to be something you're going to want to take a look at. Then you have the JMS problem determination, which is good. If you're having problems with JMS, you may, you know, want to go and review that. And then the system management and configuration red book is a good look, too. And then we've got some additional product resources on the next slide. Sorry, Elijah. And now I'll turn it back over to Elijah for questions and answers, hopefully.
And we do have a question from Sai Akula with Fidelity. Please go ahead.
Hello. I had a question on the SIB failover and load balancing. How do you achieve that in VAS 6.1?
With the SIB client?
Either with a SIB client or a SIB client.
Yeah, there's not going to be any failover ability with the SIB client. So
with the J2E client?
With the JSE client, with the Portly client.
No, like
right.
like a web application within a container?
Right. Well, I think we should probably talk about that offline because that's not really part of this presentation. But feel, if you want to shoot me an email, it's rrmontjo@us.ibm.com.
Okay.
Okay, because we're specific to the Portly client today.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll pause again for just one moment. If you have a question, press star 1. It appears there are no other questions. I'd like to turn the call back to Elijah Robertson for any additional or closing remarks.
At this time, we'll conclude the presentation. We hope the information presented today has been valuable to you. We appreciate your participation. We hope you will join us for future presentations, which will be announced on the Webster Support Technical Exchange site. Remember, a replay of today's presentation will also be on the site in the next day or two. Thanks very much for joining us today, and thanks, Rich, for presenting today.